It is Thursday, November 24. You are listening to the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio, and we have Josh Reynolds of the Bulldogs coming up shortly. And over at the World Cup at the moment, Belgium have taken a 1-0 lead against Canada there, 48 minutes gone in their match this morning, and there was a huge upset overnight. Japan beat Germany 2-1. Spain beat Costa Rica 7-0. And Morocco and Croatia finished scoreless in the other match. The Wanderers were beaten 5-1 by Everton in the Sydney Super Cup overnight as well. The Australian PGA has just gone underway. Adam Scott has teed off over there in the golf at Royal Queensland. We had a text here too before off the back of speaking to Gowie. Gowie's tips, by the way, are Minwoo Lee and Maverick Antcliffe for the Aussie PGA. And on the text line, Ben, hey guys, what's Paul Gow's podcast? Didn't know he had one. And sitting in machines for a living, I go through a few. Up the Panthers for 2023, says Ben. Well, he doesn't do it anymore, Ben, but I'm sure you could probably still find it. Your Golf Show was Gowie's podcast, Your Golf Show. Now, just before we've got Josh coming on, yesterday, well, obviously gripped by Socceroos World Cup fever, but Loz Buzz has done his top 50 in the Daily Telegraph yesterday. Now, his top five, Nathan Cleary, Joey Manu at 2, James Tedesco 3, Cameron Munster 4, and Jerome Luai 5. And now, among those to miss out on the top 50, Kalen Ponga, Payne Haas, David Fifita as well. Probably, you know, Fifita I could understand. Gee, Haas and Ponga to miss out. You'd have to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, though. But yeah, obviously very subjective, no doubt. But what do you make of his top five? How close do you think he is? Cleary, Manu, Tedesco, Munster, Luai?
Yeah, I think all those players you could make a case for. Jerome Luai, top five, possibly wouldn't be in my top five. But with Tedesco, Cleary, Manu, and who was the other guy, did you say? Munster?
Munster.
Yeah, I could make a case for all those guys being in the top five players in the game. Jerome Luai, yeah, I think he's had a tremendous season for Penrith. Missed a few games there towards the back end of the season, but to be able to perform the way he did for Samoa in the World Cup, it just shows you what a wonderful player he is, and you know, he's formed a great combination, obviously, with Nathan Cleary out there at Penrith. But look, I think it's all subjective, Middo. It comes down to what you see in a player, what they've been able to do this season for their team, the impact that they've had on other players within that playing group. You look at what, you know, Josh Adokar, for instance, has done. He started off slow for the Bulldogs, then finished the year off in sensational fashion. And then, of course, went on that World Cup trip for Australia and possibly was the player of the tournament. So you could make a case for him being higher up than what he possibly is at the moment. I think he came in around 16th or something like that. But yeah, it's all subjective. Look, I think they all deserve to be there. I think they've all had big years. Isaiah Yeo's had a massive year for Penrith. I don't know where he finished, but he possibly would have been someone I would have possibly put, if I was picking someone from Penrith, in the top five, he possibly would have been that player. Or a guy like Dylan Brown, who I thought was exceptional, had a tremendous year. We saw what he did in the grand final. He was, just the man of the match in that game. Unlucky to have missed the World Cup squad. So, look, I think there's a lot of good players around. I don't think you could argue too strongly with four of the top five. You could probably, as I said before, make a case for someone else coming in front of Jerome Luai. But what he's been able to do over the back end of the season has been remarkable.
All right, time to speak to our man, the great Josh Reynolds. Morning to you, I was going to call you Bulldog Josh, but you're not a Bulldog yet, really, but you are. Josh, morning, mate. How are you?
I'm great, boys. How are we going?
When do you find out, mate? When is the sort of deadline where you'll know whether you're in the top 30 or not?
I think it was 12 weeks from when I started. I think it's around the end of February. So Fingers crossed, yeah, I get a couple of trials in, and then, yeah, we go from there. I'm not completely sure if, you know, it can come before or even after, but, yeah, I'm just concentrating on getting in there every day and ripping in, mate, and, yeah, just seeing what comes of it, to be honest, boys.
Joshy, what's it been like, mate? What's pre-season been like? How's the body going? And, mate, how's it been to be back at the Bulldogs?
Yeah, Clarky, it's been a real buzz, mate. For the first time, you know, I've just gone in there with no expectations, and you know, I'm just enjoying every day. And I honestly am. Like, even though it's hard, it is pre-season, and don't get me wrong, there's some days where I come, you know, leave there with a smile on my face, but then as soon as I get out the door, I'm like, Jesus, it's been tough. But in saying that, it's changed a lot. You know, in a good way, but then it's still got, you know, the pillars of the same sort of people when I was there, and, you know, a lot of the coaching staff, totally new squad. But yeah, it's been great. All the boys are, you know, the old cliche, buying in, you know, at this time, and everyone's really excited. But, you know, it's the back end of week three now, heading to week four. So this is probably when it gets a bit tough on the body and the mind. And, you know, it's when you get into these conditioning days, it does, you know, play a bit of mind games, mate. But all in all, mate, I'm honestly having a ball, and yeah, it just feels great to be home.
Is it all or nothing for you, Grubby? I mean, if it comes February, I know you're just looking at, you know, trying to win that contract. But if the contract's not offered to you, will you give it away, or will you run around in the New South Wales Cup? What's it that look like if it doesn't turn out the way you want it to?
Yeah, it's a good question, Loz, and I have spoken to George, my manager, about that. Look, there's a few possibilities, I guess, Loz. You know, not too sure. I'm not exactly sure of the rules at the moment with the inside-outside top 30, whether you can play or not. But look, if I'm, you know, I'm not in the picture at the start of the year, Loz, I'd like to, you know, still give myself a chance after that, if I can, outside of the top 30, if I don't get in. But mate, if I'm not a part of, I suppose, the plans, or you know, Cam doesn't think, you know, I'm sort of up to it. Yeah, I probably will give it away, like, to be honest. I don't want to go anywhere else. It was sort of a one chance thing for me. I've told the, you know, a lot of the boys there that I've only wanted to come back and play for this club, and I suppose how much it does mean to me. So yeah, I'm just giving it every shot, Loz, and fingers crossed I can get over the line in the end.
Were you surprised, like all of us, when Josh Jackson announced that he was finishing up? Because I think a lot of people still thought he had plenty to offer, but obviously he knows his body better than anyone else, and you know him as a great mate, and I know him as a guy that I loved coaching, because you just knew that he was going to give you everything, both on the training pack and training track and away from it. So is he still going to be involved in the club? Have you seen him around? How's he travelling?
Yeah, Loz, it was, mate. I'm not going to lie. I was very excited to get back there and, you know, possibly even just to train with Jacko and be around him again. We played on that right edge for, you know, about 5 or 6 years together, mate, and formed a very, you know, close bond. So yeah, we're very close, and yeah, I suppose we sort of had a chat early when I did get back, and you know, I sort of told him that I'm keen on having a crack if they were interested, and had a couple of chats, and then yeah, when it got pretty close to when we're about to start, he actually messaged me and just said, look, mate, it's I can't do it anymore. You know, I think I don't want to speak for Jacko, but I think, you know, he was training a bit in the off season, and he's just said something along the lines of he was thinking about, you know, retiring, and he sort of just said, when I was thinking about it, you know, it's not the greatest sign, I guess. So, but in saying that, Loz, he's been around the boys pretty much since he finished. So he's helping out our strength and conditioning, in the gym and coming out in the field, and you can just still see he has a presence and an impact when he's not even, you know, training with us, Loz. And he's a very, very selfless guy, and I know a lot of the boys have a lot of respect for him. So he's going to be around the group all year, and, you know, he'll still have a massive impact on the club, because let's face it, he was there for the hardest times these last, I suppose, you know, 4 to 5 years when they went through the hard stuff, and, you know, fingers crossed they're on the up now.
Isn't it amazing, Grubby, you talk about, you know, you have these buzzwords in clubs about, you know, being tough and resilient, and you mentioned that word then, selfless, and you can all say that word, but not many people are selfless. You can honestly say that Josh Jackson would put others before him.
And you know what, like, I, for me, as a person, even away from a footy club, that they're the people I love to gravitate to, and I can honestly say, and, you know, I'm not going to say exactly what it was, but Jacko, you know, had a year in his contract, and, you know, he could have just stuck it out and, you know, collected the money, but he put the club first, and, you know, probably a couple of junior boys first, who were on the up before himself. And, you know, I've never honestly heard a bad word about Jacko, and I'm sure you're the same, Loz, in all the camps that you had him, because he just, he's straight down the line, is exactly how it is, but at the same time, he's always there for you on and off the field. So, yeah, I love playing with him, mate. He's a great friend.
Early, Josh, Josh, I was going to ask, what did you think of the World Cup, mate? What did you make of that? What did you make of the Aussies' performances? But also, I guess, most impressive was Samoa making it to the final.
Yeah, Clarky, it was awesome, wasn't it? You know, and there's always people saying, oh, you know, we've got to change the World Cup, this and that. And it's just, you know, I'm not a young guy. One of the young boys playing with us at the moment, he's actually a family friend of ours. We've grown up sort of together. Bailey Hay, who played for Scotland, he was their halfback. And, you know, Scotland didn't go too well in the competition. They lost all three games and whatever, but, you know, just speaking to him, the experience he had over there, he hasn't, you know, made grade yet. But just to play with those guys in that arena, he loved it. So when people say the World Cup, you know, isn't good for all these big scores, you don't realise what it has, you know, impact it has on young players, you know, representing their family. I thought, to be honest, Clarkie, Australia were pretty clunky throughout the World Cup. And then eventually found their feet in the last game. You know, I think Nathan was under some scrutiny, and in the last game he just stood up and, you know, set up three tries. But obviously the story of the cup was Samoa, and, you know, got embarrassed by England early in the piece, and, you know, come back, and it was just obviously just to see their fair family, the way they, you know, represent how proud they are. It's pretty cool, isn't it? You know, even around Belmore and stuff, you know, there's flags everywhere, and it's just cool to see that people love the game that much, and they're very proud to represent their country.
Tell us, Josh, about working with Cameron Serraldo, and I know very early days, small sample size, but how's he unique in comparison to other coaches you've worked with?
Yeah, he's been great, Mido. The one thing that I will probably say about Cam, he's very in depth, mate. He stripped everything back at the start, and there's a few things I think, you know, for myself even, that you go into preseason and you're just expected to know it, I guess. Just little things, detail in defence and things like that. And Cam stripped it all back, and, you know, we're doing a lot of drills where, you know, no one wants to get beat on inside shoulders, and, you know, just little, I suppose, rules in defensive lines that, yeah, you're expected to know, but he's pulling it all back. And the one thing I really love that he's doing, he's really buying into the community and the culture. He's brought back a lot of, you know, ex great Bulldogs around. You know, got Mace and Ogre and Bobcat who are around the club at the moment. And he said, you know, because Cam's, you know, not from Belmore, but from around here when he was a bit younger. So he gets the community and he's really brought into that. So, yeah, it's been a great start, Mido, honestly. I know a lot of the boys are really buying into everything he's doing. And, you know, Trav Toomer's been great for us too, new to the club. And he's got a whole different outlook on, you know, breathing techniques. And, yeah, it's just working. But, yeah, hopefully we continue it. And, you know, it leads into some really good performances throughout the year.
Without giving too much away, Grubby, and this is what I love about young coaches. I love them getting an opportunity and love them putting their own brand and style on things. One of the frustrations you get, though, with some young coaches is they come out of the system and they try and implement the system they've been at their new club. What do you think we can expect from the Bulldogs under Cameron Ciraldo? A Penrith-like team, or a bit of Penrith and a bit of his own sort of magic sprinkled on there?
I'm pretty confident, Loz, that Cam knows that we're not going to be, you know, like a Penrith team. I always think you got to play, you know, with the players you've got. You know, there's no use of us playing like Penrith if, you know, we haven't got the likes of, you know, a Cleary or a Crichton every player and every team has different, strengths. But obviously, Loz, Cam's done a lot of their Penrith's defence over the time, and their defence has been great. So I'm sure he's going to implement a bit of the defensive styles. But he said he wants to, you know, he wants us to create our own, I suppose, brand and what we stand for. And he's massive on that. He has been big on a couple of little things that we can't do. I reckon Loz, with a new coach and a very very new team too, Loz, very young and new team. We find our own way and our own way we want to do it. But in saying that, Penrith have been unbelievable. So it'd be silly not to, I suppose, get a few little pointers of how well they have done over the last couple of years.
Tell us about working with Reid Marnie, one of the new additions there to the club. And who do you see as sort of the captaincy candidates there as well now that Josh Jackson's obviously moved on?
Yeah, Meadow, Reedy, he's only popped his head in once. He's not training yet. I actually had a bit of a go at him when he did come in that first time. But no, he's on a deserved break. He had a big year last year. But, he'll be great for the club.
I just see so much of you in him, Josh.
I think I've spoken to you about him before when I've been with you. There's something about him. Even when I sort of, I've never really met him properly before. And when he was in the gym, he just had a cheeky little smirk on his face, and I was like, "Yeah, he's my cup of tea." So I think we'll get on just fine. There is a few candidates, that Fox has put his hand up. He's a great talker, and I suppose he's a good leader, but. I think Reid would be great. Whether he wants to do it or not, I'm not too sure because he's constantly in the game and not an 80 player at hooker in the middle of the field. But one guy who's really been good since I have got there is Maxie King. He's played a fair few games. He's really smart. He knows the game, and I know the boys listen to him when he speaks. So I'm sure Cam. We'll suss it out throughout the preseason, and whoever he is, he'll be a great leader, and everyone can help him out to do that.
Now, how's the wedding preparation going, mate? I know you just got engaged, but I'm sure you've got it all locked in.
Congratulations, Grubby.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, boys. It's been good, we're actually living with Mum in Belmore at the moment. So, mate, we've got plenty of tips from Mum left, right and centre telling us what to do and what not to do. But, we're just going to enjoy it for now. And, got a big, hopefully a big year next year, and I can still be playing footy. And, we just don't want to rush it. We just want to enjoy the moment, mate, and just see how it goes from there. But it's been good, thank you.
Oh, beautiful stuff. Well, mate, always great to catch up. Sounds like you're loving the Hurt Locker there in pre-season, and we'll check in again soon.
Thanks, boys. Nice talking to you.
Belgium still leading Canada 1-0 over in the World Cup at the moment. 78th minute. It is an absolute cliffhanger in the match in the Davis Cup between Marin Cilic and Pablo Carreño Busta. This is the second rubber of the quarterfinals at the Davis Cup. Now, the winner of this tie goes through and plays Australia in the semifinals. And, Spain, which is Carreño Busta, needs to win this in order to force a third and deciding doubles match. And it is, it's a tiebreaker in the third and, it's best of five, I'm guessing, still Davis Cup. Used to be best of five. I'm actually not sure, but it's in the third set. It is best of three. So this is I'm guessing, the deciding tiebreak in the Spain-Croatia, the second rubber here between Corona Buster and Marin Cilic. So we'll keep track of that. We're going to speak to Ben Damon shortly after all the boxing last night on Main Event. And Paul Gallen won, unanimous decision, as did Michael Zarafa. Just on the text line here, Loz. Hey, Loz, I know there is no loyalty anymore, but I've been a Knight supporter since they came into the company, and I think the way that Clemmer was treated was disgraceful. He was playing good footy week in, week out, and to get rid of the player's player, to me, says why the club is struggling. Do you have an opinion? No name to that one, but I think it was... I think balance of squad had a lot to do with this and their desperation for a halfback in particular.
It did. I'm a massive Dave Clemmer fan. I love him as a person. As a footy player, I think he's had a good year last year for the Newcastle Knights. I think he may have fallen out of favour with a few people up there in Newcastle, and they decided to move him on. I think he had a run-in with a trainer there at one stage where they suspended him for a game, which was very, very odd. But the Tigers have picked up someone that's very, very handy, more than handy. You know, he's a tough front rower. He's only 28 years of age. He's still got his best footy in front of him. He's very good at getting the team going forward. He has his critics, Clem. But I think what he'll be able to do with the West Tigers is transform them into a tough forward pack. I think you're right in what you say up there in Newcastle with the balance of the squad. They were looking for a halfback and they needed to move someone on that was on big money. And Dave Clemmer was that guy that was able to be forced out of the club. I think he enjoyed living in Newcastle. He wanted to be up there for the rest of his footy career, but we all know that sometimes you can't get what you want. But I think Clem would be happy that he feels wanted at the Tigers. I just get the feeling he didn't feel like he was wanted up there in Newcastle, and there might have been some issues at play where they were looking to move him on, and in the end, that's how it's transpired. But I still think that he gave his all for that club. I thought he had a terrific season, and I can only think without him where they would have ended up.
Time to talk some boxing, and joining us now, fresh, very fresh from calling on Main Event last night, is the voice of Main Event, and it's boxing, Ben Damon. Ben, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. Very fresh. It was a late night, that's for sure, but we saw the end of the road for Paul Gallen. He won against Justin Hodges, and then, I don't know if you saw the final fight, but if you sat through Michael Zarafa against Dinlo Criati, then you did very, very well.
Well, what was the highlight of the night then? I read that Zarafa was pretty even underwhelmed with his own performance.
Yeah, it was hard to commentate, that's for sure, because nothing happened over the course of 10 rounds. Michael Zarafa, I don't know if he did it because he is the bad guy of Australian boxing. I'm not sure if he did it intentionally and just sort of said, you know, this is what you're going to have to sit through. You're going to have to watch this. He is number one middleweight in the world, ranked by the WBA, number two with the IBF. But in the fight that he had with Dinlo Criati last night, he just basically didn't do anything. He just sort of moved around, did slightly enough in the rounds to win them, and ultimately did win the fight. But the highlight was not anything that happened in that fight. It was more Paul Gallen finishing his career with a win against Justin Hodges, who was actually very good last night. He boxed quite well. Hodges, he tried really hard, and they went the distance in their fight, with Gallen winning the fight and ultimately retiring from professional sport after one of the more remarkable professional sports careers that we've seen in Australia. There was plenty more that happened on the undercard. A really good fight, a really good night of fights, rather. Yeah, we didn't see it in that final fight for Michael Zarafa.
Ben, the right decision from Gal, did he go on too long? Was this the right time? Was it the right last fight? And again, I think he's done, you know, so much for boxing, considering he's, you know, first and foremost been he was a great rugby league player. But how did you see last night? Should the fight have happened? Where do you see it?
Yeah, I think it's understandable that now is the time. I think it's fair enough that he fought on and took on Justin Hodges last night. There was a really good first fight between the pair, and Hodges had his moment, obviously dropping Paul Gallen. But this time around, Gale just did enough and outboxed Hodges. He's done remarkable things for Australian boxing. He was talking about that last night, and the fact that he has brought through a number of fighters, including Tim Zhu, who previously fought on the undercards of Gallen and now is the biggest fighter in the country by some significant space. He's done the right thing throughout his professional boxing career. He's had the right idea, Paul Gallen. He's been very good at times. You have to think that not only did he beat Mark Hunt, a combat sports legend, and outboxed him over a number of rounds in their fight, but he also knocked Lucas Brown, a former heavyweight champion of the world. So he's done some really good stuff in professional boxing, but it does feel that he's not only reached the end physically as to what he can do in a boxing sense, but also he's had enough. You could just tell last night he's spent. He can't be bothered selling the fights any further, and he can't be bothered sparring and training for them. So it's a perfect time for him to go out, and a really good way as well, given that he was in there with a Queenslander, a really strong rival of his, and he beat him last night. So it's a nice way for Paul Gallen to finish up.
Benny, do you see a lot more athletes from different codes that have ability as a boxer now starting to seriously think about ending whatever career they're in now to jump into the boxing ring, given what Gal has been able to do, given what Chock's been able to do, and Sonny Bill, and what I mean able to do, the money that they've been able to make? Because I read somewhere that Gal said that he's made $25 million over the last 3 years. That's massive.
Yeah, he was talking about that last night, actually, Gal. It's not 25 that he's made. It's 25 that he's turned over in his fights, and that was including the pay-per-view revenue that others have taken.
Right.
That's what he was saying. But yeah, there is a lot of money. Quite frankly, the money, pay-per-view money, and ticket sales are endless in Australian boxing. If you can really draw a crowd, so yeah, Loz, of course, everyone's going to think about it. But you have to be able to fight as well. There were a couple on audition last night. Siwa Takiyaha and Daniel Saluka Fifita both had fights, a couple of rugby league players. Takiyaha won, Saluka Fifita did not. And obviously they were auditioning to sort of take the place of Paul Gallen, and plenty of others will. But the thing is that he could really fight. He was very good, Paul Gallen. In his prime, he nearly went the distance with Justice Hooney, who's maybe the best heavyweight we've ever had in this country. He's just so very, very tough. So, yeah, I think everyone wants to do it, but wanting to do it and being able to do it at a top level are two very different things.
We're speaking to Ben Damon from Main Event. And, Loz, who did you call out the other day? We know you've called out Conor McGregor, but you were
Sonny Bill.
Sonny Bill, that's right. Sonny Bill. Yeah, there you go. If Gal won't fight Sonny Bill, if
oh, yeah, but I said for the Loz money. Will. Yeah. I did say for the money.
It was for $5 million, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was $5 million.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course I'll do it for $5 million. Benny, you'd do it for $5 million, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know if it'll command that sort of money, to be honest, Loz, you're fighting against Sonny Bill. Well, we can certainly put it out there, and I'm sure Kota Nasser will listen to the show. He may be looking for an opponent.
Can Sonny get down to 65 kilos?
That'll be an issue.
Well, Ben's had his own issues recently because at a media conference earlier this month, Michael Zarafa threatened to knock you out, didn't he?
Yeah, well, after what he did last night, I'm willing to go in with him, to be perfectly honest. There was not much there that posed any sort of a threat. He didn't fire a shot. It was a very, very strange. So, yeah, I'm more than happy to jump in there with Mark Zarafa on the back of that. No, but seriously, no, we've always had really good banter, Michael and I. He's a really good dude, actually. He sort of positions himself as the bad guy in Australian boxing, and he did do the runner on Tim Zhu a week out from their fight. But, last night he just did not try and entertain. I don't know what he was doing, but it wouldn't have endeared himself to anyone further than what he already was.
Does he take on Golovkin, or is that the fight he's after? And if so, like, eat Golovkin and smash him, wouldn't he?
Well, who knows? I'm not sure if Gennady Golovkin was watching last night, but he wouldn't have made it through the whole fight. But he's well positioned. He's number one in the world with the WBA. He's number two with the IBF, number seven with the WBO. So he's right up there in the middleweight rankings. And Gennady Golovkin holds two of those world titles. So if they can put some money together, maybe get some government funding, then they could bring Gennady Golovkin, an absolute legend of global boxing, to Australia to fight against Michael Zarafa. But on the back of that performance, yeah, Golovkin had come here in a canter. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe that's what he was doing, just trying to say, come out here, you'll beat me easily, and you'll earn a stack of cash. So, I don't know. It was just a bizarre fight because really nothing happened, and he beat Danilo Criati, who's a very talented boxer. He's had now 9 fights and moves around really well and is tricky to hit. But, I don't know what we saw from Zarafa last night to say that he can beat Gennady Golovkin.
Getting towards the end of the year, but Ben, what can we look forward to on main event going forward?
Zoo fighting for all of the belts in the super welterweight division on the 29th of January. We'll be over in Las Vegas calling the action there with Jim Charlo, the champion, the American, an outspoken, flashy American fighter, a very, very good fighter, one of the best in the world, in fact. And our own Tim Zoo has found himself into the opposite corner to fight for all of the belts in the super welterweight division. It's a massive, massive occasion for him. His father was so successful in Vegas. He made his American debut successfully at the MGM Grand, and he also beat Zab Judah at that same venue. And now Tim is going to go over and try and do what Kostya was able to do against one of the best fighters in the world. So that's the highlight in January, that's for sure. Cannot wait to get over there and call that fight, because it's going to be something really special. He's an outsider, no doubt, but he has been improving very, very sharply in each of his fights, and he's going to need to improve again. But he can do it, Tim Zoo. He is a chance in the fight against Jermell Charlo, and a victory there would be one of the biggest we've ever seen in Australian boxing.
And no shock with Tab, all the money is with Tim Zoo, even though, as Ben says, he's the outsider. He's $3 as it stands, and Charlo is $1.38 with Tab. That market open. Ben, thanks so much. Good calling last night, and we'll catch up soon.
All right. Thanks so much, boys.
Thinking about your next build or renovation? Wideline Windows and Doors has all the planning tools at your fingertips. Their website is full of inspirational ideas to make your project a success. There's advice and tips to get you started. They even have a colour selector and window planning tool. Plus, free online quotes returned in 48 business hours. Just upload your plans or tell them what you need. Easy. There's never been a better time to take a closer look at the Wideline Windows and Doors website. Just go to www.wideline.com.au. And I see over in the Davis Cup, it will be Australia and Croatia in the semi-finals after Marin Cilic won an epic third set tiebreak, 7-5. So 3 hours and 13 minutes on court, and he's beaten Pablo Carreño Busta in 3 sets. So 2 rubbers to love. They've clinched that tie Croatia against the hosts Spain. So Australia and Croatia in a Davis Cup semi-final. We're looking to win the Davis Cup for the first time in 19 years, 2003. And this is our first semi-final in 5 years. And that's over the weekend. Now, Brad Davison, a very good morning to you.
Morning, guys. How are we going?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. In your home state, how's the winter bottom looking this Saturday?
Yeah, shaping up nicely, guys. Obviously, we had the railway last weekend, and the winter bottom this weekend, always a good sprint race, and good to see plenty of day horses head over for it as well. We've got Rothfire there, Valana at Paul Laley, the Astrologist, so it's shaping up to be a decent race. Look, Valana's a horse that's just been progressing beautifully this preparation, hasn't he? Interesting there, the Godolphin, happy to take him over. He's clearly continued to train on well after his last start win, and yeah, I like the way that he's been going about his work, his campaign. So a real opportunity for Rothfire as well. Bit of a mixed preparation so far for him, and he'll get his chance over there. He's currently favourite, and of course, Elite Street, a bit of local flavour there in the race as well. So looking forward to that one, seeing how all that plays out. But, yep, the Perth Carnival continues to come on this weekend after the spring in Melbourne and Sydney.
What's happening at Canterbury, buddy, tomorrow night? Will we see night racing go ahead?
Yeah, night racing tomorrow night, Clarkie. That'll continue. Obviously, had the first meeting there a couple of weeks ago for the summer, and good to see that good weather continuing for that card tomorrow night. Always one of my favourites. Always enjoy betting there on Friday nights at Canterbury, and watching that into the weekend. And yeah, it's always a terrific night out. If you're in Sydney, you've got nothing to do tomorrow night, I'm sure the weather will be pretty good, and head along there, take the kids, and there's always plenty of entertainment and great racing. And yeah, look, the good thing as well is that the track played really well its first meeting back. Being well documented a couple of years ago that the track was playing a bit inside and on fence, but it seems to be really fair the last 6 to 12 months. So whatever they've done there, it seems to be working. And yeah, it was a really good surface there first up a couple of weeks ago.
What's the plans going forward for Private Eye, mate?
Yeah, Loz, Joe Pride's going to keep him to the sprinting trips next year or next autumn, Newmarket, and head towards a TJ Smith and an all-age stakes. Obviously, this spring, he's been a revelation, hasn't he, ever since they've kept him to those shorter trips. He, of course, has won an Epsom over a mile and probably should have won a Stradbroke as well over 1,400, but I think the key's been just keeping him nice and sharp. He won first up down the straight at Flemington, and then, of course, he ran so well in an Everest and then won at Rose Hill convincingly, and they took him to the Champions Mile at Flemington, and he just raced a bit fresh and obviously was too bad to be true there. But I think Joe's worked out well. He's just really turned into a sharp sprinter, and that's the way to train him. So that's the plan in the autumn, and, gee, the way he went about it this spring, he's going to be one of the best sprinters in the land, you'd have to think, for the next few years.
Thanks so much, Dave. We'll get all your mail tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be a good day, guys. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into the two major meetings in Sydney and Melbourne over the next 24 hours, and get some mail for the listeners tomorrow.
Great stuff. Brad Davidson there, and just seeing Belgium have won that game against Canada at the World Cup. It's finished 1-0, it's a minute to wait. News is next to come in the last hour of the program. Archie Thompson, former Socceroo Melbourne Victory great, will join us after the news. And we've got Lee Jamon from Cricket New South Wales, the chief executive there as well. Dave Stanley to preview Racing HQ also.